fundamental characteristic of growth for everyone, especially for women, is the ability to put yourself outside of your comfort zone. When we do that, that allows us to build resiliency and sort of become at peace with the constantly changing circumstances. Mm-hmm. I mean, change is only happening at a much faster pace in a technology-driven society that we're in today. So my number one advice for women, for female, you know, leaders that are looking to develop is, remember, first of all, nothing in life is permanent. And as such, change is the one thing that's guaranteed and that's constant. So get comfortable with that.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Jessica Hope Elias.
Hello and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. I'm your host, Jess Elias, head of PMO for Reef Technology and founder of Hopetopia, a women empowerment nonprofit group. I'm excited to have Galena Russell with me today, COO of Reef Energy at Reef Technology. Galena, thank you so much for being here with me today. Can you please give us a brief introduction?
Sure. Hi, Jess. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. Just to briefly professionally introduce myself, I'm currently focused on driving sustainability through technologies at Reef, and that includes building energy resiliency and electrifying various modes of transport. To go a little bit further back, I've spent the bulk of my career deploying technologies supporting shared goods and services, such as mobility. But work aside, kind of a fun fact about me is I'm actually Russian and Cuban, and I absolutely love learning about other cultures and studying different languages.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Outside of your professional career, what is your personal passion?
Yeah, so in addition to, you know, learning different cultures and traveling, my personal passion is actually helping children that are in minority groups, especially those that are subject to socioeconomic circumstances. So impoverished children, those that don't have a strong support system or stable support system, children in foster care, or just kids, you know, that are lacking fair access to opportunities.
Thank you. That's very touching, Galena. And I know we'll touch on why as well and the influences to that in this interview. But I know that women empowerment and mentorship is also extremely important to you. And I'd like you to share with our audience why you've chosen to champion those causes and what the value of that has provided back to you in return.
Yeah, well, I'll start with saying that I'm a strong believer in transfer of knowledge. Knowledge is extremely powerful, and not just knowledge in the sense of academia, but in a much broader sense. In fact, I think the most valuable, you know, knowledge comes from life experiences. So for many women, creating success in their careers or their daily lives is also a matter of perhaps learning how another woman may have navigated a similar difficult situation. Mentorship, you know, it gives me a platform to share my experiences and most importantly, share the lessons that I may have learned from, you know, navigating a certain situation or making, a mistake. And I can share those lessons with the person or the woman that I'm mentoring, hopefully to help her overcome that or deal with that specific circumstance. Part of it is encouraging to push the envelope, overcome those certain fears. I think we as people just take comfort when, you know, we know that someone else has overcome a similar difficult situation. It sort of instills hope in us and gives us a little extra bravery. And that to me, what empowerment is about in mentorship.
That's great. So giving back, paying it forward.
Exactly.
As you know, March is Women's History Month, and International Women's Day is celebrated on March 8th. However, as you and I have discussed privately, it is not a widely known holiday in the US. In fact, I actually looked this up before the interview. Apple and Google do not have International Women's Day listed as a major holiday on their stock iCal or Google calendars, which is sad and astonishing. But next is a two-part question. So one, why does International Women's Day hold such significance to you personally? And two, although you grew up in Russia before being fostered as a teenager in the US, do you feel a connection to International Women's Day through your Russian heritage?
Yeah. So personally, you know, for me, I remember this day as one of the more significant holidays that was celebrated during my childhood in Russia. This was a day when all men, you know, brothers, male friends, fathers, husbands, gifted women flowers and, you know, beautiful cards. It was just a day where a woman was made to feel extremely special. It was a day when, you know, you felt almost privileged, right, to be a woman. And as a little girl, I remember feeling extremely special on this day. And one of, you know, the kind of intimate memories that I have is a memory of my older brother who, you know, religiously every single year on March 8th would give me this beautiful card. And it wasn't much, right? But it was the thought that counted and the words that he would write in that card. And he would write, you know, how proud he was of me and that I would go on to do, you know, whatever it is to set my mind to, and I can accomplish anything. And it was a day, you know, where you really felt empowered. And I think now as an adult, as a woman, and experiencing this holiday in different contexts, it's also a day that allows women of different nationalities and backgrounds to unite and just remember, you know, to appreciate one another.
That's amazing. And that was a bit foretelling of your brother in those cards, as you have accomplished a lot. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So something we both have in common is being adopted by American families. And I know personally how it has shaped my perspective on life and why I feel that it's so crucial to give back and help others, especially women. Do you feel that your adoption has influenced your outlook on women empowerment and community service? And if so, and if yes, how so?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, I think going back to the point I made earlier, our experience or our life experiences is where we accrue most of our knowledge and how to deal with certain situations and how to, you know, act as adults, right? So for me, speaking of international adoption, so in addition to navigating the cultural barriers that come with being adopted internationally, there was also a socioeconomic adjustment that I had to make. I had come from a very poor way of living. And now, you know, coming into the US and seeing a middle class America and an upper class America for the first time, you know, a refrigerator full of food at your disposal, clothes that you can own, you know, that you didn't have to share, you know, big homes with no fences, like those types of things were things I experienced for the first time. And the reason I'm giving this context is a part of me at that time during that transition felt a little torn. I didn't feel like I quite could relate to the communities that I was living in here. And I always had this sense of almost self-inflicted guilt, I guess, and in feeling that I was extremely privileged to be given this chance to live a better life here in America. But with time, I learned to embrace, you know, that process, that transition that I went through. And all of the resources that were available for kids and for, you know, for people like me with a similar background. So I truly feel it's my duty, not just a fiduciary duty to, you know, contribute by giving back financially in terms of community service, but especially by way of encouraging, mentoring, educating others that are in a similar, you know, disadvantaged situation or come from maybe a place where they feel a little hopeless on what resources are available specifically to those people, to those children or those women, and how to take, you know, any situation that you're in and really make the best out of it.
That's I know Michelle Obama has talked about this as well, in terms of a survivor's remorse and then helping others, giving back. And there are actual studies that show what that empowerment and influence does to provide that confidence to women and people of minority background. So that's wonderful. Thank you. Next question. Speaking of heritage and cultural influence, in your opinion, how does culture have an effect on women's careers in business? How has it affected your career and contributed to your substantial success?
Yeah. Personally speaking, so my culture, I come from a very direct culture, a direct way of addressing a situation, direct way of talking to people. Even as children, as a kid, you know, you knew very well what you were good at and what you were not good at. Frankly, I was told, I think at a very young age, the things that I was, you know, not going to pursue. And part of it was, you know, resiliency building. So naturally, you know, that way of being raised in a very direct culture, being communicated to in a direct manner, followed me, you know, it shaped the way I communicated and followed me into my professional career. So earlier in my career, I often felt that I had to hide or sort of dial down this cultural aspect of me, so it's not mistaken for me being, you know, rude or having an attitude or, you know, not having a team player mindset. But as time sort of went on, I started to reflect and realize that that aspect of my culture was precisely what was also helping me excel. It was helping me work more efficiently. It was helping me cut through the noise. It was helping me have, you know, more perseverance, deal with stress easier, deal with rapid change, and then ultimately problem solve. So my advice is, you know, for anyone who comes from a different culture and different, you know, was raised a different way and maybe feels a little outcasted, learn how to channel that, you know, that uniqueness as a tool that in ways that can create value for you at work and for, you know, the colleagues around you or your organization. And it's tough to do, but I think, you know, if we can recognize that that precise uniqueness is actually what's, you know, fueling our success. This is actually what the reason why, you know, we are where we are today. It's a really valuable firepower to sort of gain. I guess that would be my advice there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good insight and transitional leadership, using that to your advantage. And I'm sure that was tough in transitioning from what you talked about previously, coming from Russia to the US and what a cultural shock that was. I'm sure that attributed to it even more because the personalities here are typically more different, and women are probably not as direct as you said. So I really love that you embrace that. And I think that's exactly what we need to do more often as well, is sort of lean into that, right? And embrace who you are and be authentic, right? That's more important than anything else. Mm-hmm. So a couple follow-up questions on culture. Generally overall, do you think that there has been a shift in the overall cultural acceptance of women in leadership roles over the last 5 years in the US? And consequently, do you believe that it will continue to become more normalized over the next 5 years?
Yeah, so, you know, looking at the last 5 years, I think when this first began as a movement, as a priority, and many companies, you know, adopted this as a priority and put together initiatives and, you know, way of changing policies and just, you know, making sure that in the future we're working towards a more diverse and equitable place. As with many things, when you start something, it's sort of hard to see the impact immediately. It sort of takes, I think, years, sometimes decades, right, to unravel and see what type of a positive impact a movement or a change has made. And I think now, you know, years later, we're seeing more and more companies that are prioritizing diversified boards, that are encouraging female executives and executives and management roles to be, you know, diversified. And the industry, I think, is finally at a place where we're able to reflect on the wave of change for the last, you know, 10, for the last, I would say 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. in companies that have successfully done this, and finally actually have some data on how diversifying, you know, leadership and boards has actually contributed to creativity, to productivity, and a variety of improvements and, you know, improved shareholder value as well. So I think that's a really important progress to note, because I think in a technologically driven world, we rely on data a lot to tell us to be our kind of true north. And we're finally in a place where we're looking and saying, you know, companies that have very diversified leadership or female, you know, executives have done better in certain areas. I also think there's a general sort of generational difference that has helped and will continue to help break down some of the original gender biases that, you know, we experienced over the course of the last century. So in the next 5 years, kind of a five-year outlook, I think most industries will not just have a norm of having a diversified, you know, executive group or management group, but see it as a disadvantage if an organization actually lacks female leadership.
I think that's a great perspective. And yeah, I think there is naturally just a generational shift as well. So great points. I love what you said about quantifying the measurable success of bringing in the diversified perspective of women in leadership. So the next question, per the 2020 Women in the Workplace study conducted annually by McKinsey and Company, the study said for every 100 men promoted to manager, only 85 women were promoted. As a result, women remain significantly outnumbered in entry-level management at the beginning of 2020. They held just 38% of manager-level positions, while men held 62%. So my question to you is, how can we empower and embolden other women in the workplace to push the envelope and break through the traditional societal and cultural norms without fear? What advice do you have for women trying to get into leadership roles or looking to rise from middle management to senior and executive level roles?
Yeah, I'll start with saying that I think a fundamental characteristic of growth for everyone, especially for women, is the ability to put yourself outside of your comfort zone. And, you know, when we do that, that allows us to build resiliency and sort of become at peace with the constantly changing circumstances. Mm-hmm. I mean, change is only happening at a much faster pace in a technology-driven society that we're in today. So my number one advice for women, for female, you know, leaders that are looking to develop is, remember, first of all, nothing in life is permanent. And as such, change is the one thing that's guaranteed and that's constant. So get comfortable with that. And once you get comfortable with that, challenge yourself to at least once a year and start maybe with once a year, right? To do something, a project, maybe it's an event, maybe it's a public speaking, you know, whatever it is that's a challenge for that person, personally or professionally, but challenge yourself at least once a year where you truly put yourself way outside of your comfort zone. And I think men tend to do that much more frequently and almost naturally, whereas women, you know, we shy away from that. But that's how we build resiliency. And so that's my number one advice is challenge yourself once a year. Before you know it, you'll be doing it once a quarter, once a month. And then it becomes a habitual, you know, behavior that you're comfortable being outside of your comfort zone. And I think what we can do to support that is we need to, you know, those of us who are in leadership positions and positions of influence, we need to continue to lift up and invite those women into complex new initiatives. And in that process, you know, by way of showing, of demonstrating and encouragement, encourage them to speak up, to be bold, you know, and give some sense of comfort that it's okay to not know everything. So I think that those are ways that people can break through or women can break through those barriers of growth.
I love that. Be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly.
Great advice. per the 7 Leadership Lessons Men Can Learn from Women, published by Harvard Business Review in April 2020, academic studies show that women are more likely to lead through inspiration, transforming people's attitudes and beliefs and aligning people with meaning and purpose rather than through carrots and sticks than men are. Since transformational leadership is linked to higher levels of team engagement, performance, and productivity, it is a critical path to improving leadership's performance. In your opinion, what are some predominantly female leadership qualities that you feel are overlooked or undervalued by our male counterparts? And conversely, what are typical male leadership qualities that women are unfairly judged for characterizing?
That's a long-winded question. I'll start with the beginning. So first, I have to take just a second to give credit to the men that have genuinely put forth a very serious effort in bringing equality into the workplace. And I say this because I've been lucky to work with some of those types of men who I know to be very understanding in a workplace, open-minded, curious, and, you know, genuinely just having good intentions. So I got to give credit where it's due. But to go to the second part of your question of, you know, specifically the qualities, right, that are overlooked or misunderstood. So I think the most common one, and this one is widely talked about, is, you know, when a woman is assertive in a workplace, it can be misunderstood for being bossy or, you know, having, again, like some form of an attitude, right? And I think that also comes with a lack of education, basically. And it's on us also to educate our male counterparts on when, you know, that happens and correct the behavior. But if I had to pick one more that I think is less talked about, but I've noticed is our attention to detail tends to be, sometimes can be mistaken for missing the big picture. And which, you know, can limit your seat at the table, right? So whereas I see that practice of attention to detail, our way of basically fact checking and ensuring that the small things are logically connected to the big picture. So it's just a matter of, you know, there's a thousand different ways that a person can get to the same goalpost. And then looking at the male side of things, I think showing empathy has always been a rather contradictory quality. The nature, you know, of many activities, including competitive sports, arguably forces maybe a lack of empathy. It feels almost conflicting, you know, to show empathy and try to win at the same time, let's say. So as such, I think when men show deep empathy, there's a tendency to label that as weakness. And whether it's a self-inflicted label or it's an external label, you know, coming from colleagues or from women, let's say, I think we need to transition to linking characteristics like empathy, understanding, diversity, inclusiveness with strong leader, right? With strengths, leadership, and success. And the opposites of those qualities should be linked with weaknesses, right? When someone is unempathetic, when someone is egocentric. But that, I think, is actually, you know, to throw on my philosophical hat, is a broader societal cognitive shift that needs to happen.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so I think you're saying link strong leadership qualities in general and disassociate them from male or female.
That and link strong leadership qualities to adjectives like being empathetic, like being understanding, like caring about diversity and inclusiveness. When we start to link that with what does a strong leader look like for me? Oh, it's someone who shows empathy. It's someone who does this. That's a strong person. You know, what does a weak leader look like? Oh, it's someone who is self, you know, centered, someone who's a little bit narcissistic. You know, so we need to have that shift in mentality. So we see role models differently, right? And I think that needs to happen across the entire spectrum of people, not just, you know, women
worldwide. Yes.
Yeah.
There needs to be a big shift there. Totally agree. Thank you so much, Galina. So one of our last questions here is, as a strong leader in our community, what has been one of your most memorable accomplishments as a mentor?
Well, you know, the sheer joy in mentoring, I think, is in seeing the person that you're mentoring succeed. So if I may kind of divert this a little bit away from the accomplishment piece and to just simply encouraging others to mentor. There's no playbook for being a good mentor. So I think a lot of people get to a place in their career when they're like, am I ready to be a mentor? And it's, you know, if you've had life experiences and you're comfortable talking about them, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it could be as simple as listening to someone and sharing your honest thoughts. And, you know, for me, the best mentors have always been people that showed vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And have been able to connect their personal experiences to how they find value or meaning within their work, and not being able to share that with others. So I know I diverted the answer bit from the original question, but I want to take the moment to encourage others to become mentors, whether they think they're ready or not. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always someone that is likely facing a similar situation that we've already faced.
Let their voice be heard. Let their story be heard. I think that's wonderful. I also would like to call out the vulnerability. I think that is actually a strong leadership quality. If we go back to the last question, one of my favorite books is Brené Brown, Daring Greatly. And I always talk about vulnerability. So I think that is something that I would love to see permeated across more leadership teams.
I agree.
All right. So my last question is, do you have a personal mantra or favorite quote that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, I have a book of mantras and quotes, I think, in my head that I pull at different times, depending on the situation that I'm in. But I think in the context of today's discussion, I would like to quote Confucius. He has a quote that says, "I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand." I just love that quote because it speaks to experiences and understanding through experience.
Absolutely. Yes, I love that. I think a lot of people are too scared to go back to one of your previous questions and answers is, when's the last time you did something for the first time, right? Take a risk and be comfortable being uncomfortable and just do, because you're never going to learn if you don't do. So I absolutely love that. And I do want to say thank you to our listeners. We hope that this episode was inspiring for women, as well as insightful for men and empowering for all. Our goal is to be inclusive and informative. Thank you.
If you liked this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you don't want to miss new episodes, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and please visit ivypodcast.com for more information.